this is the map of Palestine, contains all the villages before the occupation at 1948. All the villages of Palestine. This is the name of our village. This is our village.
You could be anywhere in the world, really. Detroit or San Francisco, San Salvador or Sydney, Paris, Beirut, Amman or Ramallah. And the exile will put his index finger on a map of old Palestine and tell you.
This is our village. This is.
I know an old man named Abu Hani. We met in Ramallah. He in his sport coat and tie, V-neck sweater, and snow-white keffiyeh held down by a double black band. Abu Hani's wet, sad eyes seem always to be looking into the past.
Always when I remember my village and see my ruined home, I cannot stop myself from weeping.
Abu Hani's village, Dereban, doesn't exist except in his mind and in the pages of a book he took decades to assemble.
This is the village, the three mountains, some pictures, my wife eating pigs.
Dereban is now an imaginary village, forged by Abu Hani's memory and longing. It did exist until Abu Hani was 13 and a half back in 1948. He says he's still 13 and a half. Now what's left of the village is Abu Hani's book, Songs of the Finest Wheat in Palestine, Broken Stones, and Dirt. Some of that dirt he took with him to the wedding of his nephew in Jordan.
I believe that the soil of Dereban means many, many things. Therefore, I gave the soil to the nephew and his bride. All the audience were in this hall where no speaking.
These are images from the imaginary village. Ripe olives bound for the oil press, apricots that grow plumper, oranges that grow sweeter in the memory every year since 1948, woven birds on the breastplate of a Palestinian dress, coins from the Ottomans made into jewelry, dyes from the indigo of Palestine, a jar of dirt for a wedding present.
As in Arabic, I wrote, this is a gift for you from your village, Earth, Dereban, which says to you, don't forget me. Don't forget your village.
The imaginary village is the place that disappeared half a century ago. After 1948, when 750,000 Palestinians fled or were driven out of the new state of Israel, wrecking crews destroyed many of their villages. Now hundreds of thousands of people, second, third, fourth generations, will tell you they are from a place that doesn't exist. Their home is the homeland that they have never seen. And yet their mothers still carry the keys, their grandfathers the deeds to their homes from 1948. And it is these lands that millions still dream of, still insist on returning to.
When I think of a picture, I think of a farm, like a plantation in a way. And when I wake up in the morning, I wake up to a nice smell. I wake up to the smell of my country. I eat from my land. I'm there with my family.
There are stories about how fertile the land was. It bore olives, lemons, and figs. But there were always stories about the amazing apricot tree in the yard. My parents used to say that each branch would be heavy with apricots. An entire kilo in one cluster of apricots.
I want to go to school there, and I want to play with my friends. I want to play hide and seek between the trees.
It has figs, it has all different types of figs. It has apples, it has pears, it has all kinds of things. And when he was young, he used to go to the forest. He used to climb the trees and pick up the pine cones. And then he used to break the green cones so he could eat the kernel inside of them. So he'd stay all day eating pine cones.
The imaginary village can't be found on a modern map. It is a phantom village. Phantom like the pain in the limb of an amputee. Something lost that goes on hurting. Once upon a time, there was a real village. There were hundreds of them. Then they were gone.
It was dark.
It was night.
We walked between the hills. We walked all through the night. People tripped up. It was a long journey.
It began in May 1948 when Jewish leaders in Palestine proclaimed the birth of modern Israel. Arab governments pledged to block the establishment of the new state. Some sent troops who came to the aid of Arab villagers in old Palestine. Eventually, those troops withdrew, outmatched by Israel's determined army.
Abu Salim, my husband, he came running up the stairs. He was a young man at the time. And he said to me, "Come on, pack up, we have to go." So I said to him, "Why should we go?" He said, "You know, the country is falling. The country is falling." He said, "You know, there could be some problems. Anyway, you'll only have to leave for a short time. So just take whatever you can, light stuff with you." I said, "But where are we going to?" He answered me, "We'll go to Lebanon. We only have to go there for 15 days, and then they'll be able to bring back everything." So we took our little daughter and just a couple of our belongings, and we left everything else behind. And there were lots of people leaving with their children. We started off walking in the early morning, and we arrived, Ramesh, at dawn. So we walked through the night. We walked all the way through the night. And when we got there, so many other people had arrived from different places.
From the Mediterranean coast, they walked to Gaza. From the central plain to Ramallah and east across the River Jordan. Those with the means went further into exile, to Cairo, to London, to America. But most camped out closer to home. From the Galilee and the villages around Haifa, thousands went north into Lebanon. Just for 15 days, they were told. There, at the southern edge of a strange country, they could gaze across the fence at the lights of Palestine.
You know, when a child is born into the family, as this child starts speaking, we show them on this map where our village is, where their village is.
Another map on a living room wall in a refugee camp not far from the South Lebanon border. The camp is called Ain El Hilwe, Wellspring of Beauty. Its streets are crowded and strewn with garbage. They're named after the villages you can see on the map, places that haven't existed for 50 years. This family came here for 15 days, 55 years ago. Yet the camp is still temporary, repairs and improvements never made. Why bother if soon you're going home?
I used to tell the story to my children. Now I bring my grandchildren also and tell them the story. Anytime I bring them to tell them the story, I bring a piece of paper and a pen, and I draw our neighborhood. I'll show them where our house was, or where the neighbor's houses were. And I show them also how to go from place to place, how to go from the neighborhood to the nearby hills where we used to play all the time. There is a tree over there, and there is a tree on the other side of the village. I show them where the mayor's house was. I show them where the girls' school was. I show them where the boys' school was. Not just our neighborhood. I show them every corner of the village and talk about it. And even the smallest kid, the smallest grandson, is absolutely fascinated looking at the drawings I'm making.
If you ask me, what is my dream is to die in Palestine, even though I don't know it.
She doesn't know it, but she says she's willing to sacrifice for it. That's because what endures is not only imaginary. What endures in the refugee camps across Lebanon and Jordan and Gaza and the West Bank and Syria is an idea preserved in UN resolutions and spoken from millions of Palestinian lips, the right of return. In this same small living room, opposite the map of an imaginary Palestine, on a wall you could pound down with your fists, hangs a Chinese rifle. From its barrel, a plastic rose.
This is the son of my son. So it's my grandson. He is the son of a martyr. My son was a martyr. His picture is on the other wall, the one with the star. And this is also my son. And he was also a martyr. And this is my wife's father. He was also a martyr. The two were martyred in the Israeli invasion.
For thousands of families scattered in the camps across the Arab world, or serving you buttery date pastries and coffee in dollhouse cups in the living rooms of Amman and Cairo, the dream of return is not only energized by memory, it comes from what happened in 1948. And how it happened, and how, they say, much of the world has yet to acknowledge that.
You know, I wouldn't have sacrificed my children if it wasn't because I was living with Palestine. My children were newlyweds, they'd only been married a couple of years. I sacrificed my children. I'm bringing up their children, and it's because of Palestine.
Some Palestinians reject this attachment to the past. One refugee says he's sick of people making a fetish of memory. Others say the fixation on the past creates a murderous present. And so why not just move on? One side won and the other lost in 1948. Time, finally, to build a life in a new place. And anyway, if the village is gone, isn't the dream just an illusion?
I was on the barbed wire between Palestine and Lebanon. I made my hand in the air of Palestine, in the atmosphere of Palestine. But you know, I was on the barbed wire.
This is a political activist named Suhail. He spends his days working for Return from a refugee camp in Lebanon. A few years ago, he drove to the southern edge of the country and stuck his hand through the fence.
I saw the Israelis moving in the land there. Army and civilians. It was sitting there, immobilized. You can't step one step forward towards your country, towards your dream. It was one of the worst moments I had it ever in my life.
On the other side of the fence lay something still imaginary. And then Suhail's mother got permission to visit her old home on the Mediterranean coast. Suddenly, the imaginary village became real.
And when she got the opportunity to visit Akka, she went there. She was realizing that the life and the facts there are different from what she has in mind as dreams and hopes. And my mother was saying all the time, this is not what I dreamt. This is not the return I'd like to do.
A real return could never be as sweet as those dreams of an ever more perfect imaginary village. But when reality is exile, return seems the only thing worth dreaming of.
This is not my house. This is not my home, you know. This is not my land. Anytime the person who owns this land, the government, whoever it is, they can come knock on my door and say, okay, you have to leave. They can bring the bulldozers in. They can knock it down. They can kick me out. They can send me somewhere else. This doesn't belong to me. My home is there with my family on my land where my parents were, where their parents were, where my brothers and sisters are. That's my home. That belongs to me. Hon mish baiti.